I'm hopeful, regardless of the outcome. Boost the positive energy without one. Sorry about the jab, I'm on a holy field. I'm bearing fruit, but demons try to eat them like Yoshi meal. I piss them off the Batman like Falcone deals. Jungle full of predators, I know how Mowgli feels. So I got the fire, refuse to live in fear. I can spot suppliers eating fresh roads. Call me private label.
Oh yeah, welcome to the bonus episode of the Permaculture Pimpcast, the only Pimpcast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, and practical living, and sometimes even the paranormal. So, look, y'all, I'm not even going to mess around. I am so excited to talk to my guest today. We'll get to that in a minute, but right off the bat, this episode is always brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap from twooldcrowshomestead.com. Turn that simp into a pimp. Bam! Heaven's Harvest, y'all, 10% off with promo code PERMA. PERMA Redemption Shield. Gotta say, y'all, I am absolutely positively over the top. Just got my shipment in from Redemption Shield the other day. Yeah, I wish I use my same discount promo code PERMA. Look, when I say, look, we're grounded from the feet up around this place. And we talked about it in a couple of episodes ago where Michelle basically wrapped herself into these things and some of her pressure points or pain points, all these things that were just really not doing very well, all of a sudden within an hour got squared away. Look, it's not snake oil. I have become a massive believer in grounding and all the other stuff. So if you need grounding, shielding stuff, remember, promo code PERMA will knock 10% off. EMP shield, $50 off with promo code PERMA as well. Look, I'm a journeyman electrician, been an IBEW journeyman electrician for almost 30 years. Well, just over 25. Well, closer to 30. Anyway, you get the point. So your number one problem out there when it comes to threats in terms of the grid, I would have said in the past, would have almost certainly been lightning. But now these days, the powers that shouldn't be would have you believe that EMP is a little more prevalent than we ever thought possible. Well, anyway, you want to cover yourself on all of it. Promo code PERMA will get $50 off. And don't forget my homeboys over there, the TexasBoys.com. You can go check them out. And they got that food forest in a box. Very, very awesome idea. And in fact, like I said before, a couple of podcasts ago, we have a couple of pears popping up down there in the house. Well, if you roll like the way we do, y'all, I don't know if there's a distinction between the greenhouse and the greenhouse or the greenhouse and the house. Anyway, it's all good. But y'all, look, I'm not even going to fool around. I got a guest on today, and I think you're going to love her. I first heard about her. I want to give a hat tip to my man, Raul, over at the Firmamental Podcast. And he's like, dude, you got to get this chick on here, dude. She's the permaculture princess. I'm like, say what? Hey, that's my wife's name. I call Michelle she's my homestead honey. But also, you know, I fool around on occasion. I didn't know somebody had already taken up the name permaculture princess. Well, y'all, I heard the interview with her, actually a couple of interviews so far, and she knocked my socks off with some of the tactical nukes of information she was dropping out there. So with that said, Andrea, thank you so much for being on the Permaculture Pimpcast.
Thank you. What an introduction. I'm honored to be have a name alongside the Homestead Honey. So
yeah, she's going to get a kick at it. She didn't like the whole princess thing. And I was like, okay, well, it looks like somebody else has it all taken care of. So,
yeah, that's actually, even the princess name was almost, my brother used to mock me with it. Like he called me princess and it started as a way to mock and make fun of me. But I was like, you know what? I really own that. And as a child of God, I want people to remember I am a princess, so I take it.
Well, you're a strange bird, and I mean in a great way, because I don't know if I should get into it right off, but you know, I guess I will. But we got to hear about your background. Every good superhero has a great background. You seem like a superhero to me, and certainly somebody a whole lot of young ladies coming up right now ought to be looking up to. Mm. Why don't you give us your background, and then we'll take it from there.
Well, great. Yeah. I mean, I like the long version or the short version, but
we got as long as you need, but I think it would be a great benefit to everybody to hear, you know, as far as you want to go with it.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in a family that was like a very, I would say a spiritually focused family, but my dad was Catholic, had been raised Catholic. My mom had been raised Seventh-day Adventist, and both of them had kind of, I would say, almost stepped away from their faith to just kind of live life. They kind of, you know, they believed in God, but they weren't necessarily committed to their religion, I will say. And so, but when I was born, my dad really took the perspective of like, okay, now we have to bring up this child, and now I have to decide, how am I going to, you know, raise her? How am I going to teach her about God if I don't know necessarily what I believe? And so they kind of pursued this background of like, they asked the Catholic Church and they said, hey, we'll do baptism. And they asked the Seventh-day Adventist Church what they do, and they do a baby dedication. So my father decided that seemed a little less intense. So I was dedicated in the Seventh-day Adventist Church when I was a baby. But really what that looked like was my parents saying, we want to raise her to love the Lord. Like, we want to do everything in our power to help her to see that there is a God that loves her. And so I will say that my parents and I went down this journey together, of course, but like, you know, individually as well. And probably when I was 16, my dad really started to study the Bible. And I'm a daddy's girl through and through. I've said that before. It's part of even like my princess moniker. I just think dads in general, fathers in general, have this amazing role they play in society, which of course the devil attacks, right? So like, he attacks fatherhood because of how crucial it is to not only like everybody, but our understanding of who the Father in heaven is, right? And so I guess watching my dad go down this path of finding God and understanding the Bible and reading the Bible and the change that shifted there, that got me started in my journey. And I went from high school to college. I went to UW-Madison. I took some time off from UW-Madison. While I was at UW, I was on a reality television show called College Life. So that can be a rabbit hole for someone, I'm sure. but I was on that show. And then I took some time off. I went down to Florida, which was the Lay Institute for Evangelism at the time. I was just going to do a semester there. And then I fell in love with sharing the gospel and doing essentially lay ministry, like going out, doing Bible studies, being a Bible worker, that sort of thing. And I ended up working for that school for just another semester. And then I went with another ministry called the Questline Productions. We went to Israel. We filmed a study documentary series. And then I moved back to Tennessee, where we edited that. I went to Montana to help my aunt with a natural cancer therapy, where I met my husband, and he and I got into permaculture and homesteading and generational living. So now we live with my family. We live with my parents, and we have our two. So we live in a zone 5 farm, homestead-ish, hobby farm, if you will, in Wisconsin. And man, I like any one of those places, any one of those words I said could be a whole nother story, I'm sure. But that's like the quick background of what got me to where I am here.
All right. So I got to back up a little bit, because the second you said your mom and dad, okay, one Seventh-day Adventist and the other is a Catholic, you got like the biggest enmity in the world with Seventh-day Adventists and Catholics. I'm wondering how they even met.
Yes. Yeah, no, I love the fact that, first of all, my dad grew up in a strong Catholic family. So it wasn't just like, they'd go to church here and there. I mean, he never missed a mass until he was like 19 years old. So he was definitely committed in his mind to the Catholic Church. And the first message that really spoke to his heart was the message of hell. And so when in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, he started to learn about this biblical understanding, is from my perspective, this biblical understanding that hell is not an everlasting, eternal, fiery, burning fire, but rather a fire that goes out. like there is justice and there is a perishing. You know, John 3:16 says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life." So, I mean, that's the most famous verse in all of scripture, right? But it's also the verse that tells you the difference. The juxtaposition is eternal life or eternal damnation, which is perishing. It, like, without God, there is no life. And so with when people choose to turn away from God, there isn't a torture, there isn't punishment in that way. Rather, he just lets them go. He lets them go. But in that release, they lose their life, because if you're not with the life giver, you cannot be sustained. So that message, I think, was what really perked my dad's interest in knowing this father that could be so loving and so merciful that he'll even let his children turn away from them. And that, I mean, that really is the ultimate decision, to let go of people that choose not to go with you, to choose not to love you. And that changed his perspective of who, you know, God Almighty is. So that, I think, got him excited about studying the Bible. He also read a book called Desire of Ages by Ellen White, and that was just about the life of Christ. But that book, and it's a book I recommend to everyone, regardless of whether, you know, of course, Ellen White comes with this bias or this, it can feel like a controversial topic because there are people, me included, that consider her a prophet. And so people can kind of like push back from that and say, "Ooh, like that sounds cultish because you use the word prophet." But like all throughout scripture, we have these prophets that essentially get messages from God and speak what they were told to say. And we, of course, have that today, where we have people that are given messages from God and asked to relay those messages. And so anyway, she wrote a book called Desire of Ages, and it's all about the life of Christ. And that book, I remember specifically my dad reading it while we were traveling. My mom was a flight attendant when I was growing up, so we did a lot of traveling, non-rev traveling, which meant that we could easily get stuck or, you know, someplace like you never could check a bag because you didn't know if you had a guaranteed seat on a flight. You just had to like hope for the best. And so I remember one time we were traveling to Arizona and my dad could not put this book down. And I almost was annoyed at the time because I was a teenager and I was like, well, there's football and there's The Simpsons and there's all these other things that we used to care about and watch and do. And my dad, like, all of a sudden started caring less about the world's entertainment. He was just consuming what was good and true and holy, and you couldn't get him to be interested in anything else at the time. So my Catholic dad was really the one that brought our whole family back to studying the Bible. And he, bless his heart, he thought as he learned about, and like you said, you probably have some understanding of like the difference between the Seventh-day Adventist Church and the Catholic Church. And one of the main things being, and I don't know if I'm like blowing anything out of the water for somebody, but like, I'm welcome to talk about it. But the Seventh-day Adventist Church does teach that the Antichrist, or the position of the Antichrist, is the Pope, right? So if that is a teaching of the Adventist Church, obviously Catholicism is very different, divergent than the Adventist teaching. And so when my dad learned that, and like I said, there's lots that goes into that study and lots of conversation that could be had. But when my dad learned that, he was like, "I have to tell everybody I know." Unfortunately, not everybody he knew wanted to hear that information. So some people get really excited about the truth and they're like, "Yes, like give me more of that. Help me see and find and show more of this." And then some people are really aggravated by the truth. And I think I hate to say this because we all go through aggravated moments, right? But like the way that you receive information is very it shows where your heart is and where your heart is at. Like, do you have a learning spirit, or are you shut out or shut down to hearing new things? And Yeah, that's the long version of how my Catholic dad and my Adventist mom were able to navigate religion together. But I will say this, as we've gone through kind of our journey, we've realized that really the Bible tells us to come out of her. Like the Bible calls us out of her, as in organized religion to me. And he doesn't, in my mind, as Adventists, we used to kind of have this understanding that like, we are the remnant people, we are the remnant church. So he's calling all of his people out of, you know, paganism and all of these papal systems into our church. But really what he's calling us to is himself. He's calling us to his relationship, and that relationship, not in any organized religion. And I, like, of course there are good people in all of these various religions, but as we have found more truth along the way, what I find is that religion is where we set up these boxes and we make creeds and we have these little checklists, and you have to check the box and make sure you believe everything on that list or you can't participate in that, you know, version of organized religion. And that's why we have tens of thousands of different denominations, because everybody has a different version of truth, instead of saying, let's all journey together and have conversations together and seek the one who is good and the one who is holy. And that's Christ. Like, he is the way, the truth, and the life. And no one comes to the Father except through him. So yeah, I think that's kind of where we sit right now, where like, we don't really fit in anywhere, but yeah, I definitely have that Adventist movement background.
No, I'm right there with you. I'll tell you what, you knocked out all the follow-up questions I was going to have regarding that, because in the history of my life, I've never heard of a Catholic and an Adventist, you know, cohabitating. So it's curious how that all came about. I'm sorry to go sideways like that, but there was no way I had to get to the bottom of that. That's probably, yeah. So you got that all covered. So thank you so much. Man, I'm floored in a number of ways when it comes to your journey or what I know about it. And one of the reasons why you were such a breath of fresh air to me is, having been in this permaculture space myself, my wife, my son, and finding a Christian in this space is like trying to find the bones of Bin Laden. It really is. So that's when I heard you on the Firmamental podcast, and you were very bold in where you stand with this, and then you're throwing out scripture. I'm like, okay, yeah, I can dig this. I know what time it is. And I'm like, okay, there is no way, because one of the biggest complaints, I was thinking, there is no way I'm not going to get you on this show, because one of the biggest complaints I get from a lot of the conservative crowd that are curious about permaculture is that, and I quote, and I'm going to loosely quote it, is that there's too many weirdo, there's too many dirt worshiping heathens, is one way of some people have put it. And there's not really much of a Christian construct here. So I'm like, okay, man, outside of Nicholas Bertner and a couple of others, I mean, we're not the majority by any stretch. So I want to know how you made that, you and your husband. I don't want to give away the punchline here, but what brought you into permaculture, and how have you dealt with, and maybe your journey is a little bit different, but how have you dealt with the notion of, I don't know. I'd say even 9.9 out of 10 permaculture designers are definitely not Christian, at least from my experience. So I'm wondering how y'all made the transition into permaculture to begin with, because so many people of faith, they recoil. In fact, it's been a struggle in my YouTube channel and also in this podcast talking about permaculture to an evangelical audience by and large, because they automatically have these negative connotations with the word. So I'm sorry, I probably layered too much in there, but yeah, why don't you tell me about your permaculture journey and how you were able to, you know, overlay it with your Christian faith?
Yeah, no, I completely understand that. And I actually really appreciate you asking it. There's been a couple, you're right to say that we're not alone, because every once in a while I get one of those messages that are like, yes, somebody in permaculture that loves the Lord. Thank you. And, it really is amazing how, the New Age world has taken that word, right? Like the New Age Yeah, right. The hippies like have taken the word permaculture, which essentially just means permanent agriculture, right? So like it's not a spiritual word, but they have somehow spiritualized it in some ways. And so in some ways, I'm just taking the word back. I feel like there's just a lot of word manipulation happening these days where people want to say, oh, you can't. So here's another one. I mean, yoga is the one that gets thrown around really easily. Like you can't do these postures or these poses. And I want to tell people, let's be really careful about one thing. God created everything. Like God is the beginning and the end, the alpha and the omega. He created everything. So everything that is wrong is just a deception. It's just, you know, the devil takes things and he misconstrues and he likes to twist and make them his. But everything, all creation is God's. Every good thing is God's. So permaculture to me is one of these things where, like, simply put, it's just about creating the best possible environment for life-giving plants and animals to exist and grow together, right? That's the simplest way. It's when permaculture is applied to a piece of land, the vegetation grows more abundantly, we have more nutritional value. The application, right, when done correctly, allows plants to thrive while complementing surrounding vegetation and replenishing the soil. It's this system, and it's very systematic. It's very sciencey. And yet, if we're actually believing that this system teaches us something, then we believe that God is the controller of that system. So that's where the difference comes in. Like, there are a lot of permaculture purists that'll be like, oh, you know, Mother Earth is teaching us this, and, you know, the soil and the ground, and like we've evolved, and they want to science, like make it all just science-based. But in my philosophy, my worldview, like you can't have science without the creator who put everything into being. So if I'm going to step into permaculture, I'm going to bring my God with, like he made it. So that's the quick answer. But it's funny also you should say that, because the way I found out about permaculture was through my husband. He was listening to Jack Spirko when we lived in Montana, probably around 2012, 2013. And he took a permaculture design course through Jack Spirko. It was through Jeff Lawton. Thank you. And so he took that course. And then at the same time, I had gone back to UW-Madison to finish up my degree. And I was taking a really super duper random class called Food, Meaning, and Spirituality. And in that class, Mark Shepherd came and spoke. And I don't know if you've heard of Mark Shepherd.
Oh yeah, big fan. Yeah,
also huge in the permaculture, another Christian in the permaculture space. But he came and he used the Garden of Eden to kind of like introduce permaculture. And I was like, I'm sitting in this secular university listening to Mark Shepherd tell me about the Garden of Eden. And I literally texted my husband. I said, you have got to get to, because he was like working nearby in Madison at the time. And I was like, here's the room I'm in. Like, come and sit in this class with me because you're going to love it. Yeah, it was amazing. And it was also a class where we like a journal about how the onion made us feel. So it was a strange class, but my point is that the devil can't have all the cool things. Like this is God's message. God's message is get back to the way I designed things. And I designed things as a garden. I designed things to cohabitate together. I designed things to not have these spaces and these vacuums. And like, God didn't make fields of corn and soybeans. Like, nowhere in nature does that happen naturally. It's not the way he designed. It's the same thing as how we should be in a community. God didn't make all the same people. He made people with different abilities and different talents, and we're supposed to do life together. It's the same in nature. We need to look at what plants grow best together. And believe it or not, when you put in a variety of plants, that helps the soil, and then the soil helps the plants. And when everything is working in a circle, it helps us better understand him. It helps us better understand the one who created it all. So yeah, the permaculture the permaculture mindset is one that I heard, and I cannot separate God from it. It's just impossible. And so I refuse. And I know that it makes some New Age people frustrated, or some like godless believers frustrated, but like, I'm here, and I'm going to have the permaculture name, and I'm, I don't care. Do what you want.
Yeah. Like you said, those purists, they'll try to take you to town, because I do exactly this thing. There's seven layers of a forest, really eight when you get down to brass tacks. And I correlate it. I recently did a video with Bear Independent talking about this very same thing. And I correlate it back to how the good Lord, designed all this. And we're just, I go out, okay, when I'm designing my own food forest, okay, what do? Go out in the zone five, look how the Lord did it, and then come back and try to replicate it. That's pretty much how we go about it. And then the second you do that, it's like so many people on the far left. I'm not in this left-right paradigm or anything like it, and I suspect you aren't either. But the point being, those are the so-called permaculture purists out there. And nine times out of 10, I'm discovering that many of those people that are highly critical like that are more polished than spit and more glitter than grit. They're in the social permaculture. They're into storytelling, but at the end of the day, they're not producing anything you can eat by and large. Mm-hmm. Plus, big patches of kale. And, that's about the long and short of it right there. But it gave me such joy to hear you with such boldness. And I'm like you. That's where, at first I was going to do what Mark Shepherd did, where he called his book,
Regenerative.
It's on the shelf. I've only read the book. So
yeah, restoration agriculture.
That's right.
Yeah.
So there's Mark Shepherd, and then you have a number of others out there. Even Joel Salatin, guy wrote the foreword to my book. You have people like Greg Judy and a number of others out there, Sean and Beth Doherty. So many of them kind of steer away from the whole permaculture thing. Danny from Deep South, same thing, because the second you bring it up, you're going to have these people popping out of the woodworks. Oh, these purists that'll call you out on this, call you out on that. And I just feel less alone in this space, because like you, I'm going to take that word. You don't own it. You people over here that are highly critical about what everybody does, you don't own this word. You jump all over it. And at the end of the day, let's find out who's living a healthier lifestyle. And let's find out who's, at the end of the day, who's putting bread on the table.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. The scriptures, always the verse that comes to mind, even like when I think of permaculture design, what comes to mind is John 10:10. It says the thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. And I have come that they may have life and they may have it more abundantly. And so that whole concept of permaculture being a system that creates and produces more abundant food and more abundant, fair trade and more abundant, everything, that's God's. That is his message. It's his message to his people. It's his message to his children. So if permaculture design aligns with creation and creative design, then it's God's. Like, you do it without God if you want, but like, it's pretty impossible to me to take it away from
yeah, him. Let's find out how all that works out to you.
Yeah.
I want to hit you up about some other things too. There's so many different ways I can go about it, but I know, based on listening to your podcast, which, by the way, folks, you want to go out there and subscribe, Permaculture Princess Podcast. I see you're into, from what I'm gathering, quite a few life hacks. Biohacking. I know it could be called a number of other things. And, I want to hit you up about one in particular, probably a few of them actually. And it kind of, it's on this same space. You kind of got into it a little bit with the yoga. So I wanted to ask you how you reconcile this with the people that are critical about it. Now, my morning routine basically consists of the following: get up, pray, Bible study, Bible memorization, deep breathing, Wim Hof breathing, morning sunlight, meditation. That's where we better put an asterisk. Drinking hydrogen water, cold showers. I do this thing now with healing frequencies, even came up with this thing where I do healing frequencies overlaid with the audio Bible. That's another thing altogether. Mm-hmm. And then RF mitigation. So it's quite a routine in the morning. Get going. And some of this stuff goes throughout the day. Now, people, when I started talking about meditation, man, folks were taking me to task, or at least they thought they were. And I thought I made a pretty good explanation of it, but as I understand it, you're also into meditation as well. So some of the, you know, we'll talk about permaculture purists, but we'll also talk about some of the sanctimonious Christians out there as well who absolutely want to dismiss any other thing you have to say because you said you meditate. Now, I'm curious how, I don't know that you've ever been taken to task for talking about meditation, but if you have, I wonder how you reconcile that.
Yeah, I have been. And so I was actually just trying to, sorry if you heard typing in the background, I'm trying to find where it is that Paul talks about sacrificing food to idols. I think it's 1 Corinthians, but I'm not seeing it right now. So, but I'll just tell you about it. It's in scripture somewhere. I usually like to know exactly where I'm talking about it, but there is this, there's this part where Paul, I want to say he's talking to the Corinthians, but Paul is saying, hey, you don't have to worry about the food that is sacrificed to idols because we know those gods don't exist. Okay. So don't worry about that. You shouldn't be worried about it. But then he does this caveat where he says, however, if you're going to cause somebody else to stumble by eating that food that's sacrificed to these idols, don't do it. Don't you dare do it. And that is what hits me when you were talking about, you know, that question of, you know, meditation and whatever, yoga, all these things. To me, we recognize that the gods that want to claim ownership over these things are nothing. They are nothing before the Lord of Lords, the King of Kings. They are nothing. They try to build themselves up. And I'll tell you what, they cause a lot of havoc. They wreak a lot of havoc in this world. They do a lot of terrible, evil, demon, you know, possessed type things. But next to the King of Kings, they are nothing. And so when we are moving our body, that's God's. That's glorifying to God. Now, let's say we're going through these yoga-like positions and we are going through these movements and we're not aware of shielding ourselves with the armor of God. Can we potentially connect with the wrong thing, the wrong divine? Like, because yoga in and of itself is connecting with the divine. That's what its background is, but it's the Eastern religion side of things. Now, can you go through movements and connect with the wrong person, the wrong spirit? Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you're going to a class and the teacher of the class is connected to a different spirit. That spirit can absolutely influence and affect you if you are not shielded with the armor of God and you're not aware of where your attention is, your intentions are. And that's why it can be really dangerous to go to, like, for example, just to go to like a meditation led by Kundalini and transcendental meditation. Yeah, Kundalini. I think that those types of things, those specific things, can be very dangerous. And yet, as somebody who is covered in the blood of Christ, like, you know that these things aren't real. But if we represent that we're doing meditation and somebody who sees us doing that from the outside and says, oh, I can do that, and then they go out and do it, that then we have become a stumbling block. So this is what I will say about meditation. Meditation is God's. Like, we're told all throughout the Psalms to contemplate, to meditate. Like, that's His. In fact, there's a whole type of prayer that is contemplative prayer. And it's not talking to God, it's hearing from God, it's just considering God. It's like sitting in His nature, sitting in like space and just contemplating God. And I tell you what, that's meditation. Meditating on His word, meditating on His scripture, meditating on the things, on the blessings that He does in our lives. That's meditation. And yet that meditation where people say, oh, just let the thoughts come into your head and then send them off, or like watch them come and go, that can be a really dangerous form of meditation because we still have to be discerning while we meditate. Like, the devil walks about like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. If there is a devil walking about trying to get you to fall, you better believe that every thought that comes into your head is from one of two places. It's from God, our creator, our savior, or it's from the enemy. So the idea of meditating and being like totally open to whatever comes into your head, that's a very dangerous place. But the idea of meditating on what is good and true and pure and noble and praiseworthy, as Philippians 4:8 tells us, that's great meditation. So yeah, I think like the short answer is even a cow knows how to spit out the sticks. That's what my brother always used to tell that to me. Like, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. If you can meditate and use that breath work and use that space and use that time to fill yourself with the Spirit of God and to contemplate His good works, that is a really beautiful thing. And I think that we do far too much of this. Okay, meditation is dangerous and new agey and, you know, like, you know, manifesting, all that stuff is too dangerous. So therefore I'm just not going to do it. And guess what? We're missing out on a really, really big part, a really big discipline of our Christian walk if we're not meditating. And that's what the devil loves. He loves to like scare people away. In fact, it's like yoga is another one too, where no, I don't do yoga as, you know, as it is taught in the Eastern meditation, but do I love to go through movements, even what is called a sun salutation? I love to go through that movement, inhaling, bringing my arms up, like exhaling, forward folding. Like, I love moving with my breath and my body. And that is a worshipful experience. And there are far too many people who say, ah, that's super dangerous, I'm not going to do any of those movements. So therefore, guess what? They're not getting the benefit of the way God designed our body to move breath and body together. Again, all of it's God's. And like what I really want people to recognize is that I think we're being lazy when we start saying, this is completely cut off, and this is completely cut off, and this is completely cut off. So therefore, I'm going to put myself in this box, and I'm not going to handle or deal with any of those things. Now, there may be a day where God comes to you or me and says, hey, this is dangerous, I want you to give this up. And that could absolutely happen. And He might say that to you and not to somebody else. And He may say that to me and not to somebody else. But I try it to explain to people, sometimes God will come to you and say something like, you know what, Andrea, whenever you wear the color pink, you are really prideful. Like, I just want you to stop wearing the color pink. That doesn't mean that wearing the color pink is evil for everybody. It means that God has spoke to my heart and He said, this is something that I want you to work on. And that's a really silly example, I understand. But like, there has been times where God is like, Andrea, you need to step away from yoga. You need to step away from this. And what I realized was that I was starting to be a little bit lazy about who I was allowing to instruct me, because I was allowing these different, you know, like I would go on YouTube and I'm like, oh, I'm not a stumbling block to anyone because nobody knows I'm doing it. I know that I'm worshiping God, but like I was going through with these yoga instructors and I don't know where their heart is and what spirits am I allowing into my life when I take this instruction. And God asked me to step away from that. And I did. And for a while I was like, I really, you know, like I miss it, or I this and that. And I came up with all sorts of excuses, but that was between me and God. And God and I had to figure that out and navigate that and figure out like, what does quality movement look like for me? And I tell you what, I'm an instructor. And right now this is like maybe an overshare. I'm a verbal processor. So like everything I think comes out. I have, you know, navigated whether I class yoga at the YMCA where I teach. I teach a yoga class, and I tell people when they come in, I don't teach yoga, which is so funny because it's just they have to put it on the calendar because that's the only name that they can use for that class. And I've for like a year now said, can we change it to a different name? And they said, yeah, as long as you write up a description for the class. And I just haven't gotten around to it. And so I'm addicted even now. There are moments where it matters and moments where it doesn't. So I don't know. It's individual in so many ways.
Well, it seems to me that the ones that historically for me have been the most critical about some of the things I'll even call them healing modalities have been honestly people that have never examined it for themselves. I mean, like you were saying a moment ago, like, for example, when I'm doing the cold showers or whatever, the way I get through it is I recite the Psalms. Mm-hmm. I know that it takes me about 2 minutes to go through Psalm 1 and Psalm 2. in the shower while I'm doing it. And I'll know, okay, I got 2 minutes. Okay, get into Psalm 3, then I'm about 3.5 minutes into it. But even in Psalm 1, it says, His delight is in the law of the Lord, and in this law doth he meditate day and night. And he shall be like a tree, this is where we get into the permaculture part.
Mm-hmm.
The rivers of water that bringeth forth fruit in his season. I won't continue, but I think you get the point. I agree with you. Now, I've examined the work of people that have taught some seriously deep meditation. And then, as I told also the people in this audience, that there's a point where I know I got to jump off. When you're telling me, okay, I'm getting into this Kundalini stuff, okay, I'm out. Mm-hmm. But the area in which I know I can do it is, for example, in the deep breathing, I've found, depending on which modality you decide to go with, you know, some people will suggest that you just sit there and leave your mind blank. Like you said, I know that that is not what I should do. So in my mind, I am praising the Lord during that time I'm making a breath hold.
Mm-hmm.
Or in my meditation, it's not a focus on, I think you kind of mentioned it a little bit ago, where it seems like, you know, you focus on something long enough, you want to be a millionaire. Okay, well, those are not my desires. I want to rescue children that are caught up in child sex trafficking.
Mm.
I want to do, that's what I see. That's when I'm meditating, when I'm doing meditations, I visualize myself rescuing these kids. When I'm doing my meditations, I see myself praising the Lord. When I do these meditations, I'm doing everything the best I can imagine it in accordance with how he would want me to do it. So I think that's where the difference, but so many people don't even let you get to the point of even explaining. They've heard it from, a pastor or somebody else out there that meditation is wrong. Well, check this out. When you're daydreaming, you're meditating. I mean, it doesn't even, you know, you get before, let's say you visualize what you're going to do before a sporting event.
Mm-hmm.
That's meditation. And so many people get lost up. But I think, honestly, I think you had the best explanation. I think I'm just going to, next time I have to deal with this question again, I think I'm just going to, you know, record what you said there and play it back to
it. Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And like, using the word visualization is an important one too, because our brains, again, they're designed by God, Yahweh, the only true God designed our brains. And it's amazing how, if you, like, they've done all this tests, right? If you visualize yourself doing something, they like, the, of course, the famous one is the, you know, shooting basketball hoops. They took a group that had to just visualize shooting the basketball, and they took a group that actually practiced shooting the basketball, and they took a group that did both. And of all the groups, the group that did the best was the one that just visualized. Like, I mean, our brains, the capacity we have to make things happen because we have created the neural pathways in our brain to establish what is reality. And God said, let us make man in our image. It's not, man, it's like I said, it's not manifesting. I don't like that. I like, the word doesn't resonate with me. To me, it's collaborating with God. That's what you're doing. And he's like, you're recognizing the power that you have in changing the world around you. And I love that. I love the idea of, you know, pray without ceasing. That should be our goal, is to walk with God every day and to say, like, what should we build today? What can I imagine with you, God? Like, what would you have me design? Where would you have me go? Because he wants us to do bigger and better things. And I think that we're missing something if we're not meditating and visualizing alongside.
How many people could be cured? And I know Dr. Joe Dispenza, I've been through his course and everything. Like, mm-hmm. I said, he's one of the ones where I will absorb, in the words of Bruce Lee, I will absorb what's useful and I will dispense with the rest. But, you know, he talks about the very same thing you discussed there, where they've done the same thing with piano, where they would have people, they would like go to a place, okay, learn these chords now instead of actually playing it. I want you to go home for a week and then mentally do this several times a day. Well, if it works on a piano, if it works in basketball courts, if it works in all these different places, why not a healing modality? So you go to a doctor and they tell you, you have this awful, they tell you have this awful disease, whether it's cancer, anything else. And then all of a sudden, okay, so if you're in this space, if I can literally change how I perform in a physical task, why can't I change the way I feel. For example, one of the things I do in my meditation is I am imagining the man I would like to be. I'm dispensing with the things about myself that I don't like. I see myself behaving as the person I want to be, a person who isn't easily given to anger, a person who isn't easily given to, you know, all the other things that that are not wonderful things about me. Well, I'm finding out, and my wife can attest to it, that since I started this, and I've only been down this path with the meditation for maybe 3-4 months, maybe at the most. And I can honestly say, Andrea, I am not the same man. I do not react the same way to certain stimuli. I'm able to examine these things because I've been able to think, okay, you're in this situation. Something goes down. How would you react? Instead of doing what you would normally do, let's try a different tact. And it's worked. And it was all, and 99% of the work was done in my own mind and asking the Lord to bless it every step of the way. So, I mean, there's so many different healing modalities that exist out there. I wonder how many people with grave diagnoses, if they had the right doctor and they said, okay, look, hey, let's work on your mind and fix this, how many of those people would be healed?
Yeah, a friend of ours wrote a book called Cancer, Stress, and Mindset. Brandon LaGreca is his name. And it's exactly, you're totally right. Our mindset, our belief about something is huge. It's absolutely the biggest part of any healing modality. And you even mentioned using healing frequencies and vibrations. And to me, that is another part of God's creation that sometimes gets aligned or taken by the enemy, where everything has a frequency. Everything God designed has a frequency. And that's why we can ground. That's why when we put our feet on the earth, our inflammation goes down and our mood gets better. Now, we also know that like our clothing has frequencies, like cotton, natural fibers have different frequencies than synthetic fibers. So like now, once you start going down this rabbit hole of frequencies and vibrations and understanding, I love essential oils. I use essential oils all the time. I literally have essential oils diffusing before I started this podcast, what I put in there, copaiba and kumquat. So like they're uplifting and they're mood enhancing. So these different oils have frequencies, these different plants have frequencies. And if to me, that kind of brings us all back to that question of like permaculture and the word gymnastics that people do is like, I fully believe that like we can put our hands on a tree and like understand who God is a little bit better. Now, the big difference is it's not, what's the word I'm looking for? The pantheism, where like, I don't believe God is in that tree. I don't believe that tree is God. I don't believe that things that God creates are God. God is above his creation. He is beyond his creation. So I don't believe in the like pantheistic side of things, but I know that that's what happens to a lot of permaculture believers, right? Is that we can kind of come into this Mother Earth, Mother Nature side of things where no, like, all of this is his creation and we can become closer to God by interacting with it, literally taking soil in our hands and like feeling the microbes and feeling the frequency of the ground. But that's not God. It allows us to worship God. It allows us to praise God and see him and understand him, but it is not him himself. So yeah, I think that vibrations and frequencies are totally, that's something that I want to learn more about. And he's slowly revealing it to his children, I believe.
Well, I think, I mean, that's another thing. I've gone down this something of a rabbit hole in terms of biohacking over the last, I'd say year. And whether it was fasting, 3-day fasting, you know, all these different things, I've been looking into these frequencies and it's curious. And I talked about it a little bit in the podcast a while back that until prior to 1938, I guess all instruments were basically tuned to 444 hertz. Well, one of Hitler's henchmen, Goebbels, basically got the world together. And short story is, they changed it from something that was a very healing frequency, like 444, into something that was 440 hertz, which is very, very dissonant. And when that happened, well, it wasn't long after that. I'm not going to say it's the cause of World War II, but it wasn't long after that World War II officially kicked off. And now we're finding out, at least through my research, is that all of these healing frequencies, like I have one from Whole Tones, and I have the audio Bible. And I basically took that music, that those healing frequencies, whether it's 528, and there's a number of others, and they're called Solfeggio tones. And it is believed by certain people that David, King David, tuned his harp to 444, or maybe it was 528 hertz, but we know for sure it wasn't tuned at 440 because it's very, very dissonant. Even though every piece of music you hear on the radio right now is tuned in this very dissonant frequency. Well, today is a prime example of what was going on around here, where I found myself, and it was very unusual, with this crazy anxiety. So I put on the audio Bible with the healing tones, and then in no time at all, you know, I'm back to being, I don't know, hopefully I'm not ending up the way King Saul did. But anyway, those healing frequencies got me back in the saddle again, that with a little bit of deep breathing and some of the other things. But we tend to think that for any healing, or in the permaculture space, like you have these people, as you described a moment ago, with more of a, I'll call it an animistic worldview, where everything sort of has its own mind and feeling and thoughts and all those things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not from that angle, which makes me pretty unpopular in this space, at least among those people. But there are things that the enemy has co-opted, whether it's meditation, whether it's deep breathing. Yeah, you can go ahead, or whether it's yoga and you get mixed up in the Kundalini stuff, or it could be any one of these things. I mean, you could even take a cold shower and do it with the wrong intention. But it seems to me that it's like, for example, the Permaculture Pimp Cast. Pimp stands for Permaculture Is My Passion. Yeah, it's a very awful word in and of itself until I turned it into an acronym. And then I'm like, okay, well, now I can reach out to the kids in the hood that look a little like me, who before had zero interest in permaculture. Now I'm hearing from guys that are, because it's me, because I'm talking about this, because I'm using language, they understand that all of a sudden they're leaving where they were. One kid in particular in DC, and now he's finding himself on a farm in Virginia that he owns. So it's, I think the intention of where we want to go with this, whether it's these frequencies can be used for bad, they can be used for good. But I got to be honest with you, Andrea, whether it's this or whether it's biblical cosmology or whatever the case, it seems like the biggest pushback that I've experienced, sadly, has come from the evangelical community. I mean, the people that should be examining, I think, all of these issues, at least to whatever extent you feel comfortable, are the ones that are, that in my experience, I'll preface it that way, seem to be the ones that are most resistant to any notion of even examining this stuff. What's your experience on the matter?
Yeah, I have to say, as much as I, you know, the paradigm of the right versus left, you already mentioned, it's all the same bird to me, right? Same two wings, same bird. And yet, as much as I would probably align with the right, you know, conservative thinking, I will say that I do believe, as somebody who believes that the end times are coming, as somebody who believes that Christ is coming back, I definitely believe that it's going to be brought about by the far right, which I know that like everyone looks at what the woke left is doing and is like, oh, this is, you know, crazy with the trans movement and you know, like just the they want to take away the guns, they want to take away, like everything seems so harsh on the far left. But I do believe that that pendulum swing to the right is going to be, that's going to be what initiates the end. Like, I know that sounds very,
I'm right there with scary. You. Please continue. I'm right there with you. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I don't, like, let me also preface anything I say for those who maybe are unfamiliar with me or don't know me. Like, I am speaking with a smile because I want anybody to know, anytime we talk about, you know, apocalyptic, anytime we're talking about these end day events, 2 Timothy comes to mind, or is it 2 Timothy 1:7 comes to mind, for God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. So like, take a deep breath, because I know full well that there are definitely people that anytime you bring up the end times, they're like, like, it's just too stressful. It's too crazy to think about. But this should be exciting and it should be encouraging, because we weren't meant for this. I think C.S. Lewis was the one that said, if I should find within myself desires that this world cannot satisfy, it means only that I was meant for a different world. And I mean, maybe I can just speak for myself, but I'm sure that everybody in this life has experienced things that we're not meant to be. Like, we were not designed to handle death. Death is from the enemy. We're not designed to handle our bodies deteriorating. Like, none of that was part of the original design. Like, it's all from the enemy. So when we talk about these end day events, I really want to make sure that I preface it by saying, there is a way out of it, and God's going to give us strength in it. And it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be fun necessarily, but it can be glorious. Like, it can be enjoyable. It can be effective, right? Like a good workout. It's going to bring about the end. It's going to bring about what this is all meant for. So that being said, the far right is shut down to thinking and considering just as much as the far left. And that's fair across, like I said, even a cow knows how to spit out the sticks. We need to be able to take a piece of information, chew it in our mouths, and get rid of what doesn't work, get rid of what doesn't align with the scriptures, and keep what is right and true. And that is what we're dealing with in these end days. There's a parable where Jesus is talking about the woman who lost her pieces of silver and she, you know, swept her whole house. We need to sweep our house and get rid of man's interpretation, the dust, the dirt, the way that things have been covered up. We're like, we're coming out of the dark ages when we didn't even have access to the scriptures. And there's just been this slow climb. Another great book called The Great Controversy goes through this climb where we came out of the dark ages and Martin Luther stepped away, and then all the names, John Wesley, and like we have all these amazing leaders throughout history that said, I think we're missing something, or I think we're wrong in this. And then they went a different way and people followed them, and then a new truth came about. And I believe that we are going to be uncovering truth until the day Jesus comes. And we're told in Philippians 1:6 that we can be confident of this very thing, that he who has begun a good work in us will complete it until the day of Jesus Christ. So like, hold on to that, because it's a wild ride of unlearning, right? It's just a process of unlearning what we've been taught, because we've all been confused along the way. Biblical cosmology is a big part of that. Evolution is a big part of that. Like, we've been taught these things, and then we have to unlearn them, and not only unlearn what is from the world, but we have to unlearn what's from the church. And I think that's probably the hardest thing to get people to consider, is if I talked about this with George Hobbs from the Flat Earth Files podcast. I so badly, the one thing I want to get people to consider is having a learning spirit. Have a spirit that allows you to consider what somebody else is saying before getting angry, before retaliating. And that, I believe, is the spirit of God. Like, the spirit is a calm, a peaceful spirit of love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And if anything, anything gets you riled up, take a step back and consider it again. So yeah, I think the far right needs to learn that.
Well, I would definitely say both sides need to learn that, but good night. I mean, it's the mark of a real thinker to be able to hear any argument without necessarily agreeing or disagreeing with it, but at least being able to hear the argument, whether it's some of the healing modalities I'm talking about. And it's shocking to me the extent to which people will vehemently hold to a position without ever examining the other side of it. Okay, look at it and say, okay, does it make sense? I mean, am I going to believe it because it's dogma? Am I going to believe it because I was taught this my whole life? Or maybe mom and dad taught you this. And you know what? Like you were describing your own dad, he was brought up on a particular journey, examined it for himself, and said, okay, this is what I choose to believe based on what I've examined. Sounds like he's raised a pretty doggone smart young lady in you. But, you know, speaking of your mom and dad, people are going to kill me if I don't get into actually the permaculture stuff. Because I could honestly, I did the same thing the other day when I had Nathan Reynolds on here. I get down these rabbit paths, and because I live so isolated, it's not every day I get a great conversation. So we get to talking about these things, and then I never really come home to the point. I mean, this is supposed to be the Permaculture Pimp Cast, but You know what? We can talk just about anything, and it seems like you're very agile in conversation, so it seems like we can go anywhere. I know that you wear a lot of hats and you do a lot of different things. You know, I brought up some of the things I'm doing, but what are some of the biohacks that you're engaging in? You said something about yoga. You know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what are some of the other things you were talking about? Some of the oils, and what are the other things that people can do out there, maybe that don't cost a whole lot of money, that can get them on a healing journey?
Oh yeah, that's some of my favorite conversations, right? I'm a personal trainer and a health coach, so I love talking about the things that are free. I also, one of the things, especially as a health coach, I love doing is habit stacking. So that's where we establish a habit and then we add to that periodically and systematically so that you can maintain the things that you're already doing and then add on to that. And I everything you said actually was very similar to my routine. I love, like, my kind of walk through the day is I'll wake up in the morning and I start with a quart of warm lemon water. And I know that there's, like, back and forth, like, oh, does it actually alkalinize the body? Maybe not, but I really like the habit of warm lemon water in the morning. It's very soothing to me. It's a process of, like, I know what I'm doing when I get out of bed. I'm going to get the warm water get started. And so I really like warm lemon water in the morning. I love taking time to do devotions and prayer and meditation. And that can look different on different days. Like, sometimes that includes movement, and sometimes it includes just me sitting and journaling and reading. And I love that morning sunlight. That morning sunlight is crucial. It's crucial to my mood. It's crucial to my mitochondria. I often will tell people our mitochondrial cells are fed, I believe the statistic or the numbers are 1/3 on food, like our nutrition, making sure that we get a nutritive quality of energy in our diet. It's fed, our mitochondria are fed 2/3 on light. So we literally live, our energy is based on light. So I love morning sunlight. I am outside as often, as much as possible. I do not wear sunscreen. I want the sun to be on my skin. I love being, like, I'm also in Wisconsin, so I get what I get when it comes to sunlight. So, but I try to also do infrared light. So we have an infrared sauna. I love doing that. Cold showers are non-negotiable to me now. Like, we'll do cold plunges when we can. Actually, just for Christmas Eve, we were in Tennessee visiting family, and we did cold plunges in Lake Oso, I think it's Osoe there in Tennessee near Chattanooga. And the water was like 47, 48 degrees. So it was a pretty good cold plunge. And it's a little bit nerve-wracking when you're in a lake and it's dark and it's nighttime. And I was like, this is a different sort of cold plunge when I don't know, like, what is underneath me. So that was a little nerve-wracking, but I do love the cold. And so, yeah, cold showers are, I always end on cold. Like, sometimes I'll go back and forth between warm and cold, but always, always end on cold. And I love that you quote scripture. I will tell you what, I was convicted by you saying that you quote the Psalms. I will have to try that, because right now, my mantra every time I do a cold shower, I wish it wasn't, but it's Britney Spears' Stronger. That is what I sing.
Oh,
and I wish it was not, but that's what comes out. And so maybe I need to find another something better. I loved the Psalm idea, so we'll go with that. Let's see. I love the free things. Movement is really big in my day, so I love a good workout. I am a much kinder person if I have lifted some weights. I love CrossFit. I love, I do like the yoga and Pilates, like slowing down a little bit, that sort of mobility style. And let's see, I'm running and blanking. So biohacks.
Deep breathing or anything like that?
Yeah. So my husband is more into the Wim Hof side of things. He's definitely done, like, the full Wim Hof understanding training, read his books. Mm-hmm. And I have gone through some of the breath work. I would like to do more. I started a pub app called Christ-Centered Meditation. Speaking of meditation, I haven't put a podcast out in it in years, but one of my goals in that meditation was to allow breath work to be done over while I read the scriptures and while I read whatever part of the Bible I was reading. And so I was pretty good about doing my breath work at that time. And I've kind of backed off. I definitely do a ton of box breathing. Anytime we're walking, I'm big on nasal breathing. I'm always teaching my family and my kids and my classes and my clients to nasal breathe. My kids are awesome about this sounds terrible, but they'll like, we tape our mouths shut at night, and the kids love to do it too here and there. Not like super often, but they think it's entertaining and it is good for their nasal breathing. So they love that. And I love that 4-7-8 breath for falling asleep. That's something I use a lot.
Does that work? I've heard about it. I've never tried it. That actually works.
Yeah, I really like it. It's like you're breathing in for 4, you're holding for 7, you're breathing out for 8. And that it's just really like they have studied that count and they find that that count does best. But really, anytime you're breathing out twice as long as you're breathing in, you're kicking in that parasympathetic, you're toning the vagus nerve, you're having your body get into that rest and digest mode. So that is a big one for going to sleep. And I will say, like, I protect sleep. I'm very big about, like you said, it's funny, you call them biohacks, and I know I call them biohacks as well, but like when they become part of your life, they just become a normal part of your life. Like we turn off our Wi-Fi every night. Like we put our phones outside of our room to charge. All the phones go on airplane mode. The room is dark. It's really important that like there's no light in the room. We sleep with it cold. It's like 55 degrees in my house at night. So like it's cold because when you sleep in a cold room, you get better sleep. We try to stop eating by like 4 or 5 PM so that our food can digest before we go to sleep. So like there are little things. One of the things that have been fairly recent that I've really liked is not having any overhead lights at night. So like at night we have like Himalayan salt lamps or reading lamps, and we'll turn those lights on, but we try not to turn on any overhead lights because our body recognizes when lights are at eye level or kind of tabletop level. That is usually better for our melatonin production. And obviously those amber lights are really good. So the more you can avoid blue light at night, the better. So getting blue light blocking glasses or just trying to keep the lights lower is a nice option too. So those types of things to me are part of the way God designed it, right? Like we call it biohacking and we get things and we do things to like make it a thing, but really it's just, we were designed to get up when the sun comes up, and we're designed to be outside and be in the light, and we're designed to be barefoot and to move, and then we are designed to sleep when the sun goes down. It's like, it's simple things, but they really, really help our nutrition and our movement, and especially for people that are looking to enhance mood. I cannot overemphasize the importance of sleep and taking care of that nighttime routine. And if it's hard, you know, just one thing at a time, right? Like, okay, I'm not going to look at my phone or look at media at night, or I'm going to try journaling. If you have like a lot on your mind when you go to sleep, I like to say, just keep a journal by your bed and do kind of a brain dump before you go to bed. Just write down anything that's on your mind. And instead of calling it a brain dump, like it's just this practical activity, I like to use it as a prayer dump, right? Like I'm giving this to you, God, because if he tells us, cast your anxiety on him because he cares for you in 1 Peter 5:7. So if we're holding that, we just sometimes writing it down allows us to literally give it, like to tangibly give it to God as a way to calm down before bed. So yeah, those are some of my favorites. I love using essential oils. So the essential oils are part of my day all throughout the day. Like when I wake up in the morning, I am using it in my face routine. I'm using it as lotion. I love rubbing it on the back of my neck. If I'm actually right before this, I put a Brave roller on, which is a doTERRA kids roller for children, but I was close by and I was like, I don't know what it is. Every time I'm about to do a podcast, I'm super nervous. So I needed some of that. So
yeah, you're thinking this lunatic, I heard about him. I'm going to put on the full armor. Ain't no telling what we're going to get into.
Yeah.
including.
Yeah. So, it helped out. I'm good to go now.
Well, that's one thing I have to examine. I mean, I've really, over the last year, I'm thinking, okay, you know what I've noticed is that so many of us in the homesteading and permaculture space, man, I'll be honest with you, we're some of the most unhealthy, we're some of the least healthy people out there. And, you know, good night, man. I do a lot of physical work during the day doing a farm. So I got to be the best version of me I can find or I can become. And it's funny because everything you mentioned there, well, I'll put it this way, Andrea, if you and your husband ever come down for a visit, you're going to find yourself right at home because we do. It's amazing how much of this stuff actually overlays, but I'm sure you've been at it a much longer time than I have. Now, I will confess, I mean, tonight I'm going to try, you know, throughout the day, there's a guy on YouTube. He actually has a pretty good, cool YouTube site. It's called Breathe with Sandy. And he's got, you know, a breathing routine. Let's say you're just tired midday. You can't explain it. Well, you do this little 5-minute breathing routine and you feel like it's better than coffee. And that's another thing, you know, coffee, delayed coffee intake. That's another thing we started doing around here, or at least started doing around here, where instead of getting up, getting into the coffee, if you drink coffee, you know, put it off for 90 minutes, let the cortisol kind of get in the, you know, it's another one of those biohacks. But what blows me away is that everything, minus the red light therapy, everything you described there doesn't even cost a dime. And it's just minor things that anybody could do.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's something that my husband and I have this conversation often, where I can't tell you how many times as a personal trainer, people will reach out to me and say, you know, I'm like, I'll pay you to write me a program and, you know, like write me a month program, let, you know, put together this rigid, structured workout program. And I'll say something like, hey, can you commit to taking a walk every day? And they'll be like, okay. For 1 week, just 1 week, I want you to walk every single day. And if you can do that, then I'll write you a workout. And I kid you not, sometimes it's hard. And everybody wants this beautiful structure and this perfect routine to follow. And what I often will tell people is like, pick one thing. Like if you're listening to this, if you're listening to this right now, pick waking up in the morning and getting morning sunlight. That's a great first thing. Wake up. Go outside. I don't care where you are. Everybody can go outside. Okay. Maybe you have to get up before the sun comes up. It's okay. Whenever the sun comes up, go outside and get sunlight in your eyes. That's one thing. Spend 5 minutes. And while you do that, do some box breathing. In for 4 seconds, hold for 4 counts, out for 4 counts, hold for 4 counts. That's it. Like just do some box breathing. And then the next day, add some gratitude to that. Like pray and thank God for that ability to stand and get some sunlight and breathe in the morning. So like you said, it's free. These things are free. And once you start doing the things that are free, then you can start adding in the extras. So like for me, obviously I love using essential oils. It helps me with my breath work. So like if I drop a little bit of peppermint or some cedarwood or some sandalwood into my hands and rub them together, this invigorating or this grounding oil, it allows me to focus on my breathing nasally specifically, because now I'm getting the aromatic benefit of these essential oils and I'm focusing on my breath work. So yeah, yes, I'm not going to lie. I love a program. I love knowing when I work out in the, like when I go to work out, this is how many clean and jerks I'm doing. This is how many squats I'm doing. And I'm going to go for a run. I love knowing what my goals are and what my workout's going to look like. But let's start with what we can do first, and then we can get fancy and you can add the, you know, extra biohacks, the sauna and the cold plunge and the grounding mats. And like, you know, you can add all these things as you go, but for now, just get some sunlight and do a workout and put your feet on the earth. Like all of that is free. And yeah, so I completely agree with you. There are so many options, and sometimes we just need an accountability partner, and I'm happy to be that for people. But you can ask a friend too, like, hey, let's start this habit. Let's do this together, and let's check on each other to make sure we're doing it. And then let's add on to it. So yeah, I definitely love what you guys are up to. And I like I said, I've listened to a couple of your podcasts and I was like, right on. You've got that guy down. The one thing I don't do is I'm not a coffee drinker. So I've got too much energy without coffee. So that's the only thing that I love the biohacking world. My husband does like coffee. He likes the coffee, but I have done coffee enemas. So I guess I do partake of coffee in some ways.
I haven't done that. You know, I know a lot of people have done that with the Gerson diet. And, you know, I mean, I've heard nothing but wonderful things about it. So I may have to put that one down on the list with all the other things I'm doing right now. So good night, man. There's just so much there to cover with you. But, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't at least cover this other part, because I at least got to hit some of the permaculture and the community thing. As I understand it, you have something of a intentional community there. And it's with family. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is right now, Joel Salatin's latest book is basically called the Homesteading Tsunami. And he's describing what a lot of us who've been in this space for some time are realizing is that more even than the 1970s back to the land movement, we have record numbers of people getting into this space. And when I first got into it, I made the awful mistake of getting into it with family members. It didn't end well. Did it with friends. It worked great. Did it with family members again. Didn't work so wonderful. How do you do it? I mean, as I understand it, at your place, I mean, there's several generations there. How do you make that work?
Yeah, you know, there's always going to be compromise, right, when you're working with family. But for me, there is something special about learning from the generations. So we had four generations here at one point. My grandparents have passed now, but when I had the four generations here, I had this ability to experience what so many cultures have. I mean, African and Asian and Hispanic cultures, like they all understand this. They take care of their elders as they age, and the elders help with the young kids and the everyone in between. And so it's really our American culture that has done this thing where we separate, right? Like one person goes one way and you're supposed to leave the house and you're supposed to go out and start your own life and get your own job. And I mean, I understand, I guess I get the American dream. I get the allure of it. I have moments every once in a while where I'm like, I want my own space and I want to decorate my own way. And like, I want to do things my own way. And yet the benefits outweigh the compromise for me. And most of it comes down to the fact that we get to share this burden of life. I can't tell you how many times our family, especially 2020, I think brought it out, where we were able to sit down and have biblical conversations and deep conversations. And then we would run into somebody that was like, hey, I'm studying for the Trinity, or I'm studying the lunisolar Sabbath, or I'm studying biblical cosmology, and I'm all on my own. And like, I all of a sudden had this realization that we have this beautiful gift, that we have people that we get to look in the eye and sit next to and eat meals with and do life together. And there's so many people on these islands that don't have somebody else to really grow with and conversate, like do life with is the easiest way. And of all of the different health and biohacks that we can talk about, one of the big ones is community and relationship. And if you look into the blue zones and all of the centenarians in the world, so the blue zones are where there are places with the highest per capita centenarians, and it's in Japan and it's Italy. And the one that's in the US is Loma Linda, California. So like, go Adventists, right? Like that's why they're famous for their diet and their way of living and their focus on God. But what I think is the big uniter of all of those places is the community support. There's this community drive, and that is really good for our health. And I used to make this joke when I would do Bible study, I'd get together with people and I'd be like, I like studying the Bible and I like hanging out with you, but really I'm doing this so that I live longer. like there's benefit to gathering and being with people. So to me, generational living looks like finding a compromise. And it's hard because our society is not used to it. And we're very independent thinking, and we like to do things on our own. But there's there's so much good to making it work together. And again, it's not for everybody. So I can appreciate when somebody has said, hey, I've given it a shot and nope, that doesn't work for us. So, but I do wish that more people would give it a shot, because for us, like, there is no way that my husband and I could do what we get to do here. When we were looking for land, my husband and I got married and we lived in a little place in St. Francis, Wisconsin. So it was like near Milwaukee. And we had this little property and we did a teeny bit of gardening and, you know, landscaping there. And then we were looking for a bigger property, and everything we were looking for, my parents were like, why don't you just do that here? And so we did. And we kind of thought, oh, we'll just set them up with a food forest and a garden and, you know, and then we'll find our own property. But then as we were here, we kind of kept having these meetups where we'd say, are you guys okay? We're okay. Everybody's happy. And when we live together, it allows my parents to travel. It allows us to travel, and it allows us to share this burden of making the meals. It allows us to share the burden of taking care of the animals and taking care of the land. And some people are better at certain things than others. And yeah, there's days where, I'll give you an example. Like, my mom comes from the background of using all the Roundup, having pristine flowers, no weeds, everything look perfect, right? And Danny and I, my husband and I, came in and we were like, we're going to kind of let things grow naturally. And we're for sure not going to use any pesticides or herbicides. We're like, we'll kind of try to make it look nice, but, you know, if it looks a little wild, we're okay with that. So we have these two ways of thinking. And sometimes it comes down to, like, my mom coming and saying, this area is not working. Like, this, it looks too crazy. And so we have to kind of work it out and fix it up, or like, we, it might be other things where, like, hey, this, I need help making a meal for this event I'm doing, or whatever it is. And we can share that burden. And I'm loving it. I really enjoy it. It's hard. And we've been here almost 8 years now. So we like it. We are continuing in this way. And my dad also owns real estate. So part of our ability to do this is because we take care of the real estate and manage that, which is another reason why it means so much to have all of us here, because we take care of our own real estate, we don't have a property manager. It's really hard for my parents to travel without somebody that can change a water heater or fix the air conditioning or take care of whatever other things are coming up. So yeah, definitely the sharing the burden thing is huge. And I think that is part of our kind of our mental health crisis, even in our society, is like, we try to do too much on our own instead of helping one another and coming alongside and lifting each other up.
Well, it seems to me, I mean, based on my experience, and it seems to me that construct only works when you don't have selfish people. I mean, you have to have a very selfless group of people there. And if you take, like, for example, my brothers or whatever, and we pull them into this thing and we're all into permaculture, we're into that, you know, and then you find yourself in the middle of a Snoop Dogg song where, you know, you did all the work and then everybody got their cups when harvest time rolls around and they feel like they're entitled to a certain portion of it. But it sounds as if there's a high selfless component, you know, where you are. It sounds like, in fact, I've never known a cooperative community that ever lasted long term, unless it was in that, you know, you said it earlier. I mean, it's astonishing that this isn't a hard concept for people in Latin America. It's not a lot of Asian cultures exactly the same way, but here in the United States of Amnesia, you know, we can't seem to make this work, you know. But it's a joy to hear that you have, Andrea. I mean, you've been such a joy. I got to know, where does everybody? I know that a lot of folks are going to want to find you, and definitely want to probably reach out to you regarding some of your health journey and how you might be able to help them. Where can everybody find you?
I have a podcast that is in a little bit of a hiatus, but there's definitely great episodes there. The Permaculture Princess podcast is a really good one. My website is permacultureprincess.com. I also have a little blog that my dad and I run. That's where we kind of write all of our articles. Well, I should say I started it for my dad to write his articles, but I pop in there here and there. But that is familyfortruth.wordpress.com. So yeah, the easiest way to find me anywhere is Permaculture Princess. That moniker is anywhere. So Instagram, YouTube, Pinterest. I'm not on socials a ton, but I am around, in and around.
Well, it's been a real joy to have you on. Sorry we didn't get more into permaculture, but you know, the whole thing got derailed the second you told me you had a Catholic and a Seventh-day Adventist married together. everything just kind of went out.
Yeah. So no, I'm glad. Like I said, not everybody knows how amazing that is. So you must have some understanding of church history. So
yeah.
Sorry, my kiddo walked in.
Oh,
if you hear them
goodness.
In the background, well, they have bombarded the area.
No, it's all good. You know, hey, it's a wonderful thing to have. Hey, you've been such a joy, and folks, reach out to her. She has a really good podcast. Just was sitting here binge listening to it moments before we went live here. So, hey, y'all, check her out. Till next time, stay alert, stay alive. You sitting at Manicotti, yeah, I'm talking saucy. All they wanna build is a prison world full of pet Tamagotchis. The kamikaze got me out of body like I'm Goku SS3. They wanna push me to the center like a cell, they wanna swing up at the center of the next is me. They want me to matter, but I'm a warrior, I'm a warrior. I will never bow down, cause I'm a warrior. I'm a warrior.